Good morning and welcome once again to In Focus. I'm John Sims, and joining us again this morning, Christina Folsom, founder and CEO of the East Texas Human Needs Network. Good morning. As always, Christina, great to have you with us.
Good morning, John. Thanks for inviting me again.
Sure. Don't forget, In Focus is available online. Just go to ktbb.com/infocus. InFocus is uploaded to our website by the day after the show airs. East Texas Human Needs Network. I don't know how many times we've mentioned you in our public service announcements on the radio station, on the news. We've done several shows like this together, but there's always something new. It's a process that I know has continued to build over the years, almost 8 years now. August of 2012, I think, is when the whole thing got started. And I'll go ahead and do my disclaimer right now. I'm actually a member of the East Texas Human Needs Network, not as able to be involved the way that I was back in the day, but still certainly interested in what you're doing. And it's really of interest to the entire community. Let's get started. August 2012 is when it all began, and let's go there first. The mission, history, purpose, vision, just the groundwork for what the Human Needs Network is all about.
The idea that together we can be so much stronger and we can do so much more. The knowledge that poverty is so complex that simply one agency cannot address all of the issues that come along with poverty, that it really needs to be a huge effort with lots of players in the nonprofit sector, government, business, and community all at the table.
And that's what put the idea into your head back in 2012, when you had just recently left the organization PATH. And if I remember right, because of your experience with PATH and your interactions with other agencies, you began to see that there needed to be a lot more connection, a lot more collaboration, a lot more gap filling, if you will, amongst the different nonprofit human needs agencies, for starters, in Tyler.
Yes, absolutely. And we saw that in lots of areas, but I think in particular the issue of housing and homelessness, and a lot of people still think that that's what we're all about, and certainly is not. But it is what started. It's the idea that an individual or a family, even children that are experiencing homelessness, have a multitude of needs, and that addressing a single need or even two or three needs does not move them out of homelessness and into a stable environment where they can have education and stable employment and safe housing and health care when they need it. So understanding that those individuals who had those tremendous challenges, if we could find a way to meet those very complex needs for those individuals, then we could certainly address the needs of anyone else experiencing poverty.
When you started out, I remember this, there were some planning meetings, and then you got to a point where the main focus of your organization was the regular, I guess, monthly or maybe twice a month, I can't remember how often, but maybe monthly meetings, something along those lines, where people would actually come together and brainstorm and get to know each other, network, formulate ideas. And needless to say, you have come a long way since then. And I think it's time to go to really where you are now here in 2020. And there are three major categories, as I understand it, that you really try to focus on as you go about your really, when you think about it, 24/7, 365 operation of bringing these agencies together for the betterment of people who are really in need. And the concept of collective action is what really gets it rolling for us. Talk about collective action, that concept, what it means within the context of the Human Needs Network.
It's individuals and organizations working together for stronger connections, for strengthening programs, for increasing awareness of what is in our community, for addressing the complexity of poverty. All of us working together on that. That's collective action.
And there are so many different things you do. You have a curriculum known as Understanding Poverty that we're going to get to in just a few minutes. You have other things that you do, like the homeless count every winter. There's a poverty simulation exercise that you do. And you also continue to have regular, is it monthly meetings now?
Yes, they continue to be monthly meetings. We've been meeting monthly since 2012.
Yeah. Yeah. So I got it right.
You got it right. Every single month, all of these years, without exception.
Mm-hmm. And in Jacksonville, there's also a group that meets every month. So you've expanded into Cherokee County as well. And I know you do a lot of interaction with people in neighboring counties, even if you don't have the exact same program going on there.
Right. We're building those programs right now in Anderson and Rusk counties.
Anderson and Rusk counties. You'll have to keep us posted on that. Okay. Under collective action, this past fall, you did a comprehensive community needs assessment. I believe this is something you do every year, and it's so you can really get a picture of what the needs are and who the people are who have those needs.
We do the assessment every 3 years.
We did one
in 2013, the first year, and it was when you have this many organizations working together, how do you determine what are we going to focus our attention on and how do we work together? So the best way to do that is to actually interview individuals who live in poverty to determine what their needs are, and then build programs or connections based on those needs. So we did them in 2013, 2016, and again in the fall of 2019, and we've just seen tremendous growth, positive movement in all key indicators. Those key indicators are in economic well-being, in education, employment, health, housing and transportation. All of them are moving in the right direction.
We're talking to Christina Folsom on In Focus this morning. I'm John Sims. Christina is the founder and CEO of the East Texas Human Needs Network, also known as ETHNN, or EFIN for short. You can call it that if you like. Want to know how to get in touch? It's ethnn.org. That's the website. Phone number is 903-216-3211, or you can email info@ethnn.org, and we'll tell you in a little while the best way to do a walk-in if you want to just kind of come to one of the meetings and just get involved on a face-to-face level. But getting back to what we were talking about, you're talking about key indicators of what the real needs are. And a synonym for the word indicator would be, I guess, an issue that people are really facing that's sort of at the top of the list, right?
It is, and it's a way of measuring progress. You have to have outcomes. We call them key indicators.
Uh-huh.
But what outcome are we looking at, or what barrier or what issue are we looking at year after year after year to see or to measure progress? And one example is economic well-being. How many of the people that we interview actually live below the federal poverty threshold? And when we first did the assessment, it was 65% of those that we interviewed lived below the poverty threshold. In 2019, that number went down to 53%.
Okay.
So a tremendous move in the right direction.
So to sum it all up, fewer people in your service area are living in poverty now, and the agencies are collaborating much better than they were 7 or 8 years ago to make that happen, is what I'm hearing.
That is true.
Okay. And again, your area, primarily Smith County, but also Cherokee County, and you're moving into Anderson and Rusk counties as well. So it really is an East Texas Human Needs Network. And it's going to become even more of one, I guess, in the coming months and years. Your top 10 needs, let's go to this. And this, we're looking at a chart that there's going to be kind of a range of how people process this information. For some people, it'll just, you'll look at it and you'll know exactly what's going on. For some, it's going to be a little bit more esoteric. You can find this information on the website, ethnn.org. But Christina and I have a chart right in front of us. And basically, there were 10 top needs that were pulled out of this community needs assessment you did last fall. If you can go over each of those, maybe very briefly, and talk a little bit about each of them.
Certainly. We looked at the top 10 needs. Although we're asking questions about economic well-being, education, employment, health, housing and transportation, at some point we take all of that data and we determine what were the top 10. And 6 out of the top 10 were actually in the healthcare research area, and they were vision care was the number one need. Most mm-hmm. people wouldn't have considered that as a need, but 32% of those we interviewed said they needed vision care. Now, that's different from eye care. Vision care is being able to go to an optometrist and getting glasses.
Oh, okay.
right? So that's actually what that one is. The number two need is dental care. 30% of the people we interviewed need dental care. What's interesting about this one is that in the 20-plus years that I've done needs assessments, dental care has always been the top need, the number one need. This is the first time in all of these years that dental care is number two. And I have to say, and we're so truly grateful, this community responded in 2013 by putting together programs, expanding collaborations, and adding dental care access to the community. And it certainly is shown in this report.
Mm-hmm.
Number three is the need for health care, health insurance, access to health care, 25%. People are suffering from anxiety. Those who live in poverty, that's number four need, is treatment for anxiety. Number five is a living wage, the difference between, a lot of people still don't recognize that there is a difference between a living wage and a minimum wage, mm-hmm. that there is still an assumption that minimum wage means if you work full-time at minimum wage, it means you can make ends meet. And that's actually really far from the truth. The reality is that you have to make almost twice as much in order to have a living wage. Treatment for hypertension and treatment for depression were number six and seven. There is many people who suffer from depression and from anxiety come from very low socioeconomic environments. And it really has to do with the stress, the constant stress and trauma of living in poverty, that depression and anxiety manifests itself.
Uh-huh.
We also have number eight as computer skills. 22% of the individuals we interviewed said they need computer skills for employment. Adult education was 19%, and then career and job training, also in the employment realm, was 17% of those individuals said, we need more career and job training. Mm-hmm. So those are our top 10. Six of them are healthcare related. One is economic well-being, two are employment, and then one is education.
Okay, and you have different research areas, economic well-being, education, employment, healthcare, housing, and transportation, and those categories were subdivided several years ago, if I remember
That's
correctly.
Correct. Yes.
Talking to Christina Folsom, founder and CEO of the East Texas Human Needs Network, this is In Focus, and I'm John Sims. And job one, once you do all this research, is, again, for all the agencies to come together, collaborate with each other, and come up with strategies to deal with these needs. And obviously, you've had some success in dealing with them, although there's still a lot of hard work to do. I want to move on now to your curriculum. And keeping in mind that you do have regular monthly meetings in Tyler and in Jacksonville, we'll get to that in just a minute, but it's just so important for us to talk about going back to class so people can understand poverty. Poverty is not what people think it is in large measure, and that's something that you've been trying to drive home pretty much from the get-go. Let's just talk a little bit about how you put these curricula, if you will, together to help people understand poverty and deal with it effectively.
It's the idea that if we that the environment in which we live really forms those economic classes, it forms the behaviors and it forms the beliefs, that there are patterns of behavior in the economic class, of middle class, of wealth, and of people who live in poverty, and that our society really functions with the mental model or the patterns of behavior of middle class. And when that happens, those individuals that are living in generational poverty, trying to transition and move themselves up to middle class, if they don't understand those rules of engagement of middle class, they often are not successful. So how do we as a society begin to understand the patterns of behavior of poverty? How do people in poverty begin to understand the patterns of behavior of middle class? And how do we come together to provide the stability that not only benefits that person who lives in poverty, but that benefits anyone who is working with them? Whether you're a teacher or you're an employer or you're a healthcare provider, truly understanding the environment of poverty allows you to engage in better ways and be more successful.
Mm-hmm. We hear things. We hear, if I can do it, you can do it. Or if people would just. I have a clear memory of one of the meetings I attended a few years ago where you said you wished we could get rid of that phrase, if people would just. And one of the key credos of the East Texas Human Needs Network, I know, is getting rid of that mentality of if people would just, because they can't just. And so many of us who grew up in middle-class environments don't understand that because we haven't been there. We haven't been in the arena, so to speak.
It's such an unstable environment to live in poverty. It's really addressing one crisis after another, and it's the inability to really plan for the future because you're not even sure you're going to make it through today. But I want to touch on the idea that we talk often about. It's about giving someone a fish versus teaching them how to fish.
Mm-hmm.
But there are two more steps to that. And these are the two steps that we're trying to address is you give someone a fish, you teach them how to fish. How about you give them the tools so that they can fish?
Uh-huh.
And then how do we give them access to the pond now that they have the tools and they know how to use it so that they can go fishing?
All right.
It's give them a fish, teach them how to fish, give them the tools so that they can do this, and then give them access.
Mm-hmm.
And those third and fourth steps are the ones that we're working on.
Yeah, you bet. Talking to Christina Folsom, founder and CEO of the East Texas Human Needs Network. ETHNN.org is the website. Lots of information on there. You can find out about the different curricula, the different meetings you have, different things that you can connect people to. 903-216-3211 is the phone number, and you can email also info@ETHNN.org. There are several specific areas under this individual behavior rubric that I know you wanted to touch on. Exploitation by way largely of payday lenders. We're talking about community conditions. I think we may have already touched on that a little bit. And then there's the benefits cliff, which is that sudden drop in benefits when people get a small wage increase. If you can kind of pull all three of those together and talk about how they work so importantly into the scheme of what you're trying to do.
So what we've learned is that you really have to address all causes of poverty at the same time in order to make a dent and in order to move forward. And we've seen this model used across the nation and even in other countries. And it's a model that was developed by Dr. Ruby Payne called the AHA process. And what it says is that there are four causes of poverty, and one is individual behavior. It's the one that we often hear people say, well, why don't they just?
Yeah.
Why can't they pull themselves up by the bootstraps? So there is truth in that individual behavior can cause and perpetuate poverty, but that is only one of the causes of poverty. Exploitation is certainly a cause of poverty. It actually costs more to live in poverty than it does to in middle class. It's called a poverty premium.
Mm.
It costs more. Payday and auto title reform is hugely important for us to address this exploitation. Right now, these institutions can charge 500% interest or higher. Most people don't know that. But there are 45 cities in Texas that have adopted something called a unified ordinance. And that unified ordinance is putting a cap on how much those organizations can charge in interest. So that's really important. The third cause of poverty are community conditions. Are we providing the education that really can sustain someone through employment and through the rest of their life? Do we have employment that pays decent wages and that has the benefits that people need to live? Do we have transportation that people need in a community? So community conditions or the lack thereof are also a cause or perpetuate poverty. And then this benefits cliff, which is about policy, that sudden drop in benefits that occurs when a very small wage increase happens. For businesses, it also means that they're perpetually hiring and training for the same entry-level positions.
Mm-hmm.
This benefits cliff is the idea that people have become dependent on public benefits, and it is almost designed that way. And if we don't change the design, we can't move it. It's become an anchor. It's keeping people down as opposed to giving them a ladder so that they can get out. If it costs more to make a little bit more money, to increase your wages, your education, to get a better job, means that you lose more than you gain, then people are not going to do it.
Okay.
So those are the four causes: individual behavior, exploitation, those community conditions, and then policy. And
mm-hmm.
if we can work on all four, and we must work on all four at the same time, then we can truly address poverty.
And the way you do it that we're talking about right now is through this curriculum, which involves building a Bridges community. Is that the same as Bridges Out of Poverty?
It is.
Okay, that's the actual name of the curriculum that you use, right?
Right. Bridges Out of Poverty is the curriculum. Building a Bridges community is reaching that the critical mass, that you have enough people in a community that understand all of those concepts of building bridges. Mm-hmm. And we do have curriculum for higher education that is helping improve retention, and it's allowing generational poverty students to graduate from college. We have a curriculum for health and healthcare, which improves health outcomes and also improves clinic costs. You know, the idea that there are so many no-shows and so many clinics are hurting because generational poverty patients don't show up. This can be addressed through this training, health and healthcare. Workplace training, bridges to workplace stability, which increases the stability for both the employee and the employer. It reduces the turnover. We have the community bridges out of poverty class. It's about improving relationships. There's also one called for reentry, which is reducing recidivism. It's actually a 16-week curriculum that starts while people are still incarcerated. And when they're released, the program continues, and it has reduced recidivism tremendously. It's a very powerful mm-hmm. program. All of this is about bridges.
Okay.
Yeah.
Talking to Christina Folsom, founder CEO of the East Texas Human Needs Network, I'm John Sims. This is In Focus. Website is ethnn.org. Phone number 903-216-3211. And the email is info@ethnn.org. And hang around. I know we've talked maybe only a little about how people can get involved, and we are going to get to that. We'll spend a good portion of the last part of the show talking about that. But there was one other major component of what you do that we wanted to talk about, and it came along a couple of years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, I believe. This is 903 Help. It's a way for people, it's a new way for people to get help and to key in on the agencies and programs that can actually help them get what they need on an individual basis. How does that work?
It is an online social services directory. It is one that anyone who has a smartphone or tablet or computer and access to the internet can find information in. It is populated by more than 100 organizations that are providing the services themselves. So they go into this 903help.org and following the model and the structure, and it's a very easy to use system. They can describe the programs that they have, the services they have, who is eligible, how you access those services, who to contact. So 903help.org is online social services. It also includes, however, a self-assessment. People can go in there, do a quick self-assessment. The data doesn't go anywhere. It's theirs. It's private. But when they submit that self-assessment, it will tell them, based on what you said your needs are, here are the organizations that can help you.
Okay.
It does tremendous work for allowing people to find the help that they need in this community, in Smith and Cherokee County. And hopefully soon, it'll also be in Anderson and Rusk.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the obvious barrier here is internet access, and you have ways of dealing with that. Some of these people are already engaged with social workers who can help them with that. What are some of the other things you do to maximize the internet access that these folks are going to have?
That's correct. People need to learn about it first and foremost, and more people have access to the internet than we thought in recent years.
Okay.
But it's true. Many people don't. They don't know how to use the internet. They may have a smartphone, but they don't know how to use it to search for things. So each of our partners, 100 plus organizations, are actually teaching their clients, doing searches with them, and teaching them how to use the system so that they can find the information themselves.
Okay, very good. How do people get engaged? Well, we've already given out the website a few times, phone number, email address. People can get in touch with you directly if they want to know how they can help or how they can get more information about what you do. Maybe they have a family member who needs some help, and somebody that you're in could assist them with that. But you do have regular monthly meetings, first in Tyler, and as we do this show, the next meeting is going to be coming up Tuesday, March 17th from 1:30 to 3 p.m. These are the full network meetings where people just show up and interact with each other, and you pretty much get them up to date on what they need to know. In Tyler, they're now held at First Presbyterian Church in the Azalea District, and the next one, again, Tuesday, March 17th, 1:30 to 3 p.m. in Jacksonville, which is where the Cherokee County operation of your agency is headquartered. Trinity Episcopal Church. I believe that's on South Jackson Street.
It is.
From the years I lived in Jacksonville. That's one of the churches that hasn't moved yet. First Presbyterian hasn't moved either. So if you were around 30 or 40 years ago, you know where these places are. That meeting is Friday, March 13th, and that'll be from noon until 2 p.m. If you're in Cherokee County and you want to attend that meeting and do pretty much the same thing we just described, that's going to be happening in Tyler on March 17th. Let's get that contact information out there again, because there's so much and people are going to want to know how to get in touch with you. The ethnn.org is the website. The phone number is 903-216-3211, and you have an email address of info@ethnn.org. There was one other big event you held just a few weeks ago, and I want to talk about that. We were glad to help you promote that some, and it was called your summit. What happened at the summit, and what kind of results you feel came out of that?
The annual summit is really an opportunity for people to learn and to engage and to find connection with others that have the same passions. We actually had 7 national speakers come, all from the AHA process, all speakers that were talking about addressing poverty, basically the same curriculum that we teach, but we had it all in a single day so that people in each of these sectors could get a connection and a glimpse into what it offers, in the hopes that then they will follow through and go through the curriculum themselves and institute these policies and programs within their organizations. 320 people, so we had a full house. We had tremendous success. You know, we do all of those evaluations after the fact. 97% of the people said that they would definitely come back and encourage others to come. It was a 4.8 out of 5 rating, and we're seeing people following up. There are people who attended the conference that are signing up for poverty simulation and Bridges courses, that are attending meetings for the first time, that are calling us to ask us to develop programs for them or to do evaluations for them and within their organizations. So it was a great success.
Okay, I wanted to briefly touch on poverty simulation. We don't have a whole lot of time left in the show, but that is actually where people can, it's an exercise where people can go through a simulation of the process that people in poverty have to go through. And I think we can sum it up by saying it's not anything like what regular everyday middle class people experience on a day in, day out basis. It's been done in Tyler for a number of years now, and I know that it really is an eye-opener for folks. So certainly keep that in mind as you go about navigating and learning more about the East Texas Human Needs Network, if it's new to you and if you want to get involved. And you can get involved by attending the meetings, attending the curriculum sessions, and also by volunteering and by donating money. You're now a 501c3 nonprofit, so donate, volunteer. How do people go about that?
Go through the website. We have volunteer opportunities posted there, and donation opportunities are also on the website. And get yourself on our distribution list. There's a form you can fill out on the website that puts you on an email distribution list. We send 1 or 2 messages each month to let people know what's coming up and to give reports on what has happened. So get yourself on that mailing list and volunteer and make donations all through the website.
Okay. People may be wondering, you know, where are you located? Well, that's kind of in transition right now, and we want to mention that so people won't think we're leaving it out or not answering an important question that a lot of them may have. Bottom line, if you want to get involved in a boots-on-the-ground way with the East Texas Human Needs Network, I assume it's the same as it's been for several years now. Your best thing to do is probably to start off with a phone call or an email, and then maybe just show up at one of the full network meetings, either in Tyler or in Jacksonville, or you can maybe sign up for one of the curriculum sessions. Just get involved on that level. Just come to one of the sessions that you have, probably after you've made that initial phone call, just to get a better understanding and maybe have some one-on-one with somebody who's actually involved with a network. Did I sum that up reasonably well?
I think that you did. And when you go online, you can also look to see what organizations are engaged, and you may be working with some of those organizations and not realize that they're all partners and that we're all working together.
Okay. So make that phone call. check the website, shoot the email. There's going to be a list, I think, of meetings that are coming up, and you can handpick those. Gee, I think I'd like to go to that one, or gee, I want to know more about this one. And from there, I think what I found from my interaction with your group is that if you're concerned enough and engaged enough and passionate enough about any aspect of what is covered by the East Texas Human Needs Network, you're not going to have any trouble finding a place to fit in.
Absolutely. Many opportunities to engage.
You bet. More people joining, more organizations, more individuals.
It continues to grow, right? We started out with, 32? And there are over 100 organizations engaged. Mm-hmm. A typical meeting for Ethan is anywhere between 65 and 80 individuals, and each of those individuals is representing an organization. Mm-hmm. And they're all working within those councils and looking at the data on how do we affect change and how do we address the top needs based on our community needs assessment. Mm-hmm. That's the data that we use to determine what we do next.
All right, and guess what? We're just about out of time, and there's so much more that we could talk about, but check out that website, ethnn.org, for more information. That's probably the best thing to do. Christina Folsom, founder, CEO of the East Texas Human Needs Network, our guest this morning on In Focus. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, John.
You bet. I'm John Sims. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you again next week on In Focus.